Put on your helmet, fasten your chin strap, and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
Welcome back into the Eric Ainge Show. Got 2 hours left to play with here on a Football Friday as we get ready for Tennessee football, another great night of high school football, the NFL action, all that stuff. It's all coming, and check this out. Two more hours of the Eric Ainge Show coming at you right now. Welcoming the listeners out in the Tri-Cities and, of course, everyone here in I guess what you would call Mid-East Tennessee.
Good old Knoxville in the greater Knoxville.
Good old Knoxville.
Coming up, Jeremy Pruitt has his extension. We'll tell you what Philip Fulmer said about it. We'll tell you some of the details because it was important for Jeremy Pruitt not to get the huge bump in salary, but a huge, huge bump in incentives, particularly some of his top-line incentives. The NCAA is going to let anybody that wants to be eligible for a bowl game this year. We'll tell you about that coming up. We'll have our SEC preview coming up at 10:30. At 11 o'clock, we'll have our pick segment, thanks to Image Matters. We'll be joined by Chad and Jake here from Rusty Wallace Honda and Rusty Wallace Kia, respectively, as it is the Battle of Callahan Drive, and also Scott from Image Matters will join us, me, Eric, and Joel, as we all make our picks. Six of us, and I will hope for some better luck this year than I had last year. That's what we're hoping. We'll also get the Eric Ainge keys to the game coming up at 11:30 as well. All that and more, an action-packed 2 hours coming your way on a Football Friday here from Rusty Wallace Kia of Knoxville. Jeremy Pruitt gets his extension. Eric, it was something that was close to being announced back in March, then the pandemic struck. There was no urgency to get it done during the pandemic. The terms really haven't changed since they were agreed to back then. But Jeremy Pruitt will be Tennessee's football coach, at least contractually, through the 2025 season.
And again, that's a good thing. That's a good thing for Tennessee. It's a good thing for Jeremy Pruitt and his family. It's a good thing for the staff and all the people that he, you know, has working for him. I mean, all that stuff matters, man.
It does. Jeremy Pruitt's $3.8 million salary will remain the same this year. He did not want to take the raise this year in the COVID era and then, you know, take the raise and then take a pay cut voluntarily. He currently only makes more in the SEC than Sam Pittman, who makes $3 million, and Eli Drinkwitz, who makes $4 million. So this will bump him up to a higher rate in the SEC. But also it's heavy on incentives for his contract that will go into effect coming up here soon. Here are some of the details. Winning the SEC championship game will net him $400,000. Just appearing in it will net him $2,000. You can only get one of those. But those are both $100 increases from his previous.
You mean $200,000.
Yeah.
What did I say? $2,000.
Yeah, $200,000.
$400 to win it, $200 to show up.
Correct. Those are both $100,000 increases from his previous contract. If Jeremy Pruitt plays in a bowl game, if his team plays in a bowl game, he will get $200,000. Previously, it was just $100,000. If he plays in a New Year's Six bowl game, previously he would have gotten $200,000. Now he will get $400,000. If they reach the college football playoff, his previous bonus was $300,000. It's now $800,000. Appearing in the national championship game, his previous contract would have given him a $400,000 bonus, now $1.2 million. Winning the national championship previously was a $500,000 bonus. Now it's $1.5 million. The incentives for finishing in the top 25, top 10, and top 5 all went up as well. For being National Coach of the Year, went from $100,000 to $250,000. And winning AP SEC Coach of the Year went from $50,000 to $150,000. In lieu of taking a big jump in salary, Jeremy Pruitt has made a big bet on himself with incentives. Another area where that's important is his base salary is going up to $4.2 million if things do not turn out well and you have to buy him out. You only have to buy out 60% of the remaining salary, not the remaining total package. So he has made a big bet on himself and is going from 3.8 to 4.2. That's not an insignificant jump. That is the jump that he made is more than most people will make in a multi-year period. But he could have wanted to go up to 5 to be paid consummately with people like Lane Kiffin, people like Mike Leach. He didn't. He's keeping it at 4.2, but has an incentive structure that is much higher and much richer than any of those guys. And I think it reflects Jeremy Pruitt thinking that he is going to be a successful head coach. And I think fans can get on board with an incentive-laden contract.
No, I agree. And I think that that's when you look at the coaches that are getting contract extensions in college football, that's because, like we said earlier, Brian, they're planning to win. They're trying to put everything in motion, building towards the ultimate goal. You know, the hype video that Tennessee put out yesterday ends with Jeremy Pruitt talking to his team saying, this decade is going to be the decade of the Vols.
Yep.
And we haven't really had that decade since the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, we had the when I was in school where we were still very much a part of the conversation and we were in and out of the championship game. We were in the mix for sure. But it wasn't like you couldn't say that 2000 to 2009 was the decade of the Vols.
No.
I mean, it wasn't not our decade-ish, but it wasn't like the 90s. I mean, and I don't know that you ever get back to the 90s. I think with Florida and Georgia, the way that their programs are with the coaches they have, what you're trying to do is just get back in that tier to where you're in the conversation and you're in and out of the championship game. I mean, right now, Florida can't even say that they're there. Yeah. I mean, Mullen's been there 2 years going on three, but they haven't won the East yet. They haven't even won their own division, but they're in the mix. They're a part of the conversation. They even are picked to win it this year. So that's all you have to get back to. To say that it's the decade of the Vols, you got to be able to get back to the championship game, and you got to be able to win it.
You have to have a realistic chance to win it.
You got to have a realistic chance to win it. You know, it can't be like South Carolina getting there or Georgia a couple times that they've gotten there. I mean, you know, and then you go and you just get blown out. Georgia can say that they're in the mix.
Missouri.
Yeah. I mean, you just can't. That doesn't count. You got to be there and you got to have a legitimate chance to win the football game. And I think Pruitt could get there. I mean, I really do. I don't think it happens this year, but I think that they could be a really, really good football team. I think they could give both of those teams ahead of them right now trouble. They can give them fits. They can make it to where, you know, team like Georgia, team like Florida sitting there going, man, we don't want to play the Vols. Our boss, Ken Salyer, our GM of our Cumulus station here in Knoxville, was texting me when we were talking yesterday, and he was saying, Florida may beat Georgia, but we're gonna beat Florida at the end of the year, and we're going to keep them out of the championship game. I hope, obviously, that happens, but I mean, Todd Kelly Jr. was tweeting out 4 years ago, yesterday, about how it's already been 4 years since we've beaten Florida.
Yeah.
You know, and it was how many, 11 years before that or whatever it was. So, I mean, it's just crazy. We need to get back to beating these teams. We've had more success against Georgia recently, but not in the last couple of years, you know. So that needs to be a benchmark for this. Are you competitive for your conference, for your division or not?
So Jeremy Pruitt will continue to make $3.8 million through the end of January 2021 before his raise is prorated through the remaining 11 months of 2021. He did not, again, want to take the extra $400,000 this year because of the financial difficulties Tennessee's experiencing with the pandemic. So somebody asked the other day, did he take a voluntary pay cut like many people did? Yes and no. From the contract that was agreed upon in March, yes. From his contract that we all had knowledge of, no. So I think this is a good compromise both ways for that, because he knows how important it is to make sure that his staff is taken care of as well, and the people in the athletic department that they rely on are taken care of as well. So Jeremy Pruitt's new contract, Philip Fulmer in the release said this, quote, "I'm excited that this extension gives Jeremy the runway to continue to build on the momentum and energy we have around our football program coming out of last season. He has made excellent progress entering just his third year and clearly realizes there is much work still to be done. This extension secures him to continue his efforts to return our program to a championship level and shows our commitment to him, his staff, this team, and the future of the Tennessee Volunteers. I'm grateful to Chancellor Plowman, our administration, and the Board of Trustees for their confidence and support, as well as their leadership and attentiveness to the future of our overall athletics program." Fulmer goes on to add about they were close to finalizing this back early this year before the pandemic hit. He adds this, quote, "Jeremy informed me that he preferred not to accept a raise for this year. His focus quickly shifted to his players and supporting them through a period of interruption and uncertainty. His selflessness and concern for the greater good has been neat to observe through all of this," unquote.
It's nice to know that Fulmer and Pruitt, like, they seem to have almost a perfect athletic director head coach relationship. Mm-hmm. I remember Fulmer's talked about it publicly and I've talked to him about it privately, and relationship with your athletic director and the president of the university and consistency with that is as important to anything to having success in college football as anything. And I think Philip Fulmer and Randy Boyd are about perfect when it comes to their view and relationship with Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, and the chancellor as well being a big part of that. It seems funny. I was looking in Time Hop yesterday. It was just a year ago that some national people who didn't know what they were talking about, Dan Wolken, were writing columns about how Philip Fulmer was trying to undermine Jeremy Pruitt and wanted to take his job and be the football coach again.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It was dumb then, and it looks even dumber today with Philip Fulmer himself talking about how excited he is to give Jeremy Pruitt a contract extension because he believes he's the guy.
Well, and let's be honest. I mean, it's 2020, 2025. You know, maybe he may give Pruitt like another contract extension before he's done, but maybe not.
Yeah.
I mean, Fulmer's not going to be the athletic director for another 10 years.
Probably not.
Probably. I mean, I don't know how long he's going to do it, but I would be shocked if he were the athletic director for that long.
Right.
I'm just saying there's only another contract extension, probably one, before Fulmer's probably done being the athletic director. And hopefully Pruitt's the one getting the extension and we're not having to buy him out or anything like that. Like, in a perfect world, Fulmer only has to do this one more time, maybe two, because you never know how long, but it extends him through whenever.
Yeah.
And it's set up for long-term success and stability with the football program, because to have a good athletic department and period in the SEC especially, you have to have a good football program.
Right. Yeah, there's no other path to success. You can look about 200 miles to the west to see that in action in Nashville. We'll come back here to Rusty Wallace Key of Knoxville. 656-9900-866-656-9900. We'll take some of your phone calls coming up on the other side on the Eric Ainge Show.
I went and got myself one of those 7-day trials, and I tell you what, last two nights, I got to thank you. I've gone to bed early because those shows are putting me asleep.
Yeah, Hard Knocks this year was not good. Hard Knocks this year was not good compared to past years.
Yeah, it's a bunch of nasal swabs, house tours, and Aaron Donald's abs. But other than that, yeah.
Hard Knocks, it's gotten a little worse every year. And this year was the pinnacle of it because they had no preseason games. They only have one. My biggest objection now with Hard Knocks, and it's not their fault, is the NFL went from three cut-down days to one, and the compelling following of guys as they survive one cut but not the next is just, it's not there. So, yeah, I was disappointed this year.
So, my question is about the tight end situation. The guy that's top of our depth chart, it's Fant, right?
Yes.
Is he the younger brother of the Broncos tight end? Is that the same last name, Noah Fant? I don't think related.
I don't believe they're related.
I don't think so, no.
Okay. So y'all brought up a couple of days ago that South Carolina, we expect their corners to be pretty good, their secondary to be good. You know, first game, not too many practices. Do you think, do you think we might roll out a, six linemen set and just try to run it down their throat? Are we going to even put a tight end out there? Calvert and Carvin's, could they be on the field at the same time? Do you think that's an option? That's really what my question was about.
I think it is.
Tight end situation look like against South Carolina?
You know, I don't really care if the tight ends that we put out there can catch the ball, but whoever we put out there needs to be able to block at the point of attack. And I believe that if you don't think you have that at tight end with Austin Pope out, and maybe you do, we don't know. I mean, that's kind of the thing with the limited amount of practice. That is one question that I would have loved to have been able to answer by going and watching practice this year and watching some scrimmages. By not being able to do that, you know, I don't know if we do. But to your point, man, and I've said this before too, just put another lineman out there and go jumbo 11 personnel and hammer the football right at them and force them to put an extra guy down in there. And that may actually be even better at doing that. If you have a tight end that's okay, they may feel like they can play with six guys in the box and stop the run. If you have a lineman out there winning at the point of attack, I don't know what you do. It needs to at least be an option for tomorrow.
Thank you.
Hey, we appreciate it, Grant. I think if you have Austin Pope out there, who's more of a blocker but has a history of being a pass catcher, you know, it opens up things. But I think until they know what's proven, you may see Jim Chaney send out two guys that are blockers. You may see him send one guy out that's a blocker. You may see him not send anybody out at all. You know, you could put the two running backs in the backfield together and then spread them out with receivers and run a little up-tempo style offense. It's going to be interesting to see how Jim Chaney chooses to push those buttons this year with what he has and what he doesn't have.
Yeah, I'm excited for it, man. I really do think that we have an opportunity to get special in week one by just running the football. And the thing about Muschamp is Muschamp's game always has been and forever will be how to stop the run with the least amount of guys possible. I think that if he messes around with that too much this weekend, that we may have a few drives where we don't even have to throw the football and we just hammer it at him. I don't think that that's going to last very long, where he's going to say, okay, we can't do that. We have to adjust and we have to be ready to put extra guy down in there, guys, plural, down in there to make sure that they can't run the ball. Because if you're looking at Tennessee, are you going to let, and I'll ask you, Brian, would you rather let the O-line and running backs beat you, or do you want to make Jarrett Garantano and the new cast of receivers beat you?
Oh, you want to make Jarrett Garantano beat you.
Especially with the fact that he's got a bunch of new guys to catch the ball that no one really knows about yet.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't foresee Muschamp messing with it too long. I think that they will go to we're not going to go down 21-0 because we're trying to see if we can handle their run game with the least amount of guys possible, where we just go gash, 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 touchdown. That kind of drive would happen one time, and there'd be a headset conversation with Will Muschamp saying, no, we're done.
Yeah, we're
cover
not doing
three,
that.
Cover one, and some zone blitz pressure, some run stunts, get an extra guy in there. We're not doing that. We're not going to lose the game in the first quarter. Because I would say, you know, if you're looking at us defensively, I mean, we win that matchup too, probably. So it's not like they shouldn't be able to just go out there and run the ball against us and do the same exact thing. I mean, I think that we will be ready to stop the run and make a grad transfer quarterback, you know, from Colorado State come in here and play really well and throw the ball really well in a night game for his first real big-time football game of his career against a team that has some really talented guys at corner and at nickel. I don't see, like, this of all games that we're going to play this year, I think the game plans are very, very simple for both teams. It's going to come down to execution. Both teams are going to know what they have to do to try to win this football game.
Yeah. All right, welcome back here on the Eric Gain Show to Rusty Wallace. Here we'll have our SEC preview coming up on the other side. Run through some of the big matchups, some of the big notes as we get ready for the first week of SEC football. And again, our pick seven coming up at 11. We'll get Eric's keys to the game as well. All that and more in an action-packed Friday on a Football Friday at Rusty Wallace, Key of Knoxville on the Eric Gain Show. Welcome back into the Eric Gain Show. Coming to you live from Rusty Wallace, Kia of Knoxville, home of a 200,000-mile warranty. Up to $6,000 over Kelley Blue Book value for your trade right now at Rusty Wallace, Kia of Knoxville. It's time for our SEC preview. We do that every Friday during football season as we get you set for the most important games of the weekend. The SEC slate starts at Vaught Hemingway Stadium in Oxford, Mississippi, a noon game, 11 a.m. local time for Florida and Ole Miss. The Gators open the season as they are projected to win the SEC East, as voted by the media earlier this week. Lane Kiffin begins his first season in Oxford, his second stop as head coach at an SEC school, obviously after his tenure at Tennessee. Has been an assistant in the league with Alabama, comes to Ole Miss from FAU, where he had a very successful run as the head coach for the Owls, although in the Ole Miss promo videos, he still looks like he is being held against his will, like he did in FAU promo videos. We go to the Plains of Auburn, where it's a top 25 matchup. 23rd-ranked Kentucky is at 8th-ranked Auburn. Bo Nix, the sophomore, has a great cast of characters around him, as well as one of the top linebacking corps in the country on the defensive side of the football. Mark Stoops and his Wildcats are hoping to take some steps forward after having their season derailed by injury last year. Auburn is trying to win the SEC West for the first time since 2017. Kentucky pieced together just enough offense last season after Terry Wilson was injured, but he did lead them into contention, including big wins 2 years ago, though not at Neyland Stadium. Biggest question for Auburn is the line of scrimmage. The offensive line has four new starters, and that system with first-year coordinator Chad Morris, the former Arkansas coach, is all about being able to run the football. We'll see how they look there. The Wildcats will have Wilson and running backs to get their offense going, and they return four of their five top rushers from last year, including Kavassio Smoke and Asim Rose.
I'm not sold on Kentucky like I guess everybody else seems to be. Like, I need to – they're going to have to show – Terry Wilson's going to have to show that he's made significant progress – throwing the football. They don't have a dynamic Lynn Bowden anymore. I'm going to need to see it from Kentucky.
Mississippi State heads to LSU. It's the 3:30 game on CBS. The national title defense gets started as the Tigers have plenty of new faces around, including new quarterback Miles Brennan, defensive coordinator Bo Pelini. Only five players combined on offense and defense were listed as returning starters for Ed Orgeron. It's a bit of a season of mystery for a program that probably has the raw talent to compete for the SEC title, though nobody is projecting them to do just that. Mississippi State, well, everything's different there. Joe Moorhead was let go last year. Mike Leach, the pirate ship, pulls into harbor after his stint at Washington State. He also brought a Pac-12 quarterback with him. KJ Costello, the former Stanford starter, will be the starting quarterback for the new-look Bulldogs this year. The Bulldogs are boosted by the fact that they have Kylin Hill coming back. The senior passed on the NFL to come back to try to take his home state team back into contention. And he's a really good power back, Eric, but he's never been used extensively catching the football out of the backfield, and that's one of the premier parts of Mike Leach's offense. If he can adjust to that, he makes himself even more valuable on draft day.
Yeah, and I just, you know, Mississippi State, unfortunately, it's the same for Ole Miss, you know. Ole Miss has a little more of a dynamic quarterback with his ability to run, but I just think that the division they're playing in is too tough for them to have too much success this year.
Fourth-ranked Georgia is on the road at Arkansas. That's the 4 o'clock game on the SEC Network. Obviously, Georgia a huge favorite in this one. And the Razorbacks, coming off a 2-10 season, have lost 19 straight SEC games. This one's going to be tough. Kirby Smart says, though, his focus is clearly on Arkansas. Quote, it's your first opportunity to create your identity and figure out who your leaders are, figure out who we're going to be in all three phases of the game. You don't define that moment until kids have some adversity or go out and get some butterflies, unquote. Sam Pittman echoes that. He says this about his former boss, Kirby Smart. Quote, Kirby, I promise you, is preparing for us as hard as he would for Alabama. That is his makeup, unquote. All due respect to Sam Pittman, I'm not sure Kirby Smart is preparing for Arkansas the same way he would Alabama.
Probably not from a scheme standpoint, but you know if you're Kirby Smart, the only thing that can derail you is in a week like this is if your guys aren't ready to play. So
agreed.
He will for sure have them ready to play. And, gosh, I don't know how any team shows up in week one this year with all the COVID-ness that has been. Every team ought to be licking their chops to get to go play football.
Yes. Interesting note here. Arkansas has been in the league since the 1992 season. This is the first time they have opened a season with an SEC opponent. Of course, every game an SEC game this year. The Bulldogs are doing it for the second straight year. They opened up against Vanderbilt last year. It was basically like a non-conference game. We go to Columbia, Missouri, which are words you never really want to speak out loud. Alabama is at Missouri for a 7 o'clock game on ESPN. Listen to this stat, Eric, and it will make you groan. Since Nick Saban was hired in Alabama in 2007, the Crimson Tide have not gone more than three consecutive years without a championship.
Oh, my God.
The Crimson Tide are chasing a sixth title under Saban this season and open their 10-game All-SEC schedule with Missouri. The Tide has not lost a season opener since 2001 and is 13-0 in week one games under Nick Saban.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know there's no way Bama gets beat.
No. Missouri's a four-touchdown underdog. And
that might not be enough.
No, it's not. It had been previously reported that 12 Missouri players would not play after either testing positive or being in contact tracing. But Eli Drinkwitz said some inconclusive tests later came back negative and would allow five of those players to compete. So it appears that they will be without at least seven guys on Saturday night. That's not what you want to see against Alabama either. Though, as you pointed out, those are seven guys that aren't going to get hurt this week against Alabama and maybe back to play Tennessee next week.
Yeah, and if not hurt, maybe their confidence stays up a little bit. They stay excited. I mean, I think it's pretty disheartening to play a team that's significantly better than you in week one and you just know it's a foregone conclusion that you're going to get your butt kicked. That may be worse than being the team who has a chance to win it all and has to go play a really crappy team. No coach wants to do that. Nick Saban doesn't want to open against Mizzou. He doesn't want to open. You know, LSU getting Mississippi State, that's good.
It's just enough of a.
Yeah, like they could for sure upset them. The team has to be prepared. There's no sleepwalking. There's no anything. You know, feeling too overconfident or anything like that. It's an actual legitimate matchup, and. Yeah, I don't know what's worse, to be a 28-point underdog or to be a 28-point favorite.
Yeah. Last game, other than, of course, Tennessee, South Carolina, is Vanderbilt. The Derek Mason tour farewell tour begins at Texas A&M, 7:30 on the SEC Network alternate channel. I don't have enough energy to give you a real preview of Vanderbilt and Texas A&M. Here's the preview. Vanderbilt's going to hurt afterward, and Texas A&M is going to think they're better than they are because they're playing one of, if not the worst team to ever play in the SEC. Vanderbilt's lost everybody good from last year. They had a bunch of other guys opt out. This is going to be an epically bad Vanderbilt football team, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. I think that, and, you know, it's hard enough for Vandy. It's hard enough for everybody to play eight SEC games. Now they have to play 10, and that's all they get to play?
Yeah.
You know, that's Arkansas.
They released four co-starters at quarterback on their depth chart this week. Four. If you've got two quarterbacks, you have none. If you have four, you have negative quarterbacks.
You have a guarantee that you're going to be terrible.
Yeah. And that's what Vanderbilt has. And that's your SEC preview. Tennessee and South Carolina, of course, will come along at 7:30 as well. We'll have a full look at that coming up a little later on in the show. 656-9900 if you want to join us. More of the Eric Gaines Show comes up next.
2 years. And then 2017 Butch happened, and he became the laughingstock of the college football world. And Cade, even against his want at the time, just couldn't make a business decision to come here. And I don't blame him at all. Brian, you and I have said the whole time we did not blame Cade for going to anywhere but Tennessee in that 2017 year.
Right.
But it still, you can see, like, it still means a lot to him. So, like, I think it would be disappointing to him to not get to play this year and then go pro. He would never actually get to play here at Tennessee, and I know that matters to him. I think it would really matter the projection he got. You know, if he's going to be a fifth round draft pick, I think he comes back. If he's going to be a second or a third round draft pick, I mean, I think I'd probably advise the kid to go pro. So I think a lot of it depends on the information he gets back. I know it means a lot to him to play here, so I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I don't know if that answers the question. It's kind of like, he will rationalize playing here unless he just can't based on the grade he gets.
And without him, the offensive line looks like this, according to the depth chart Tennessee released earlier this week. Left tackles Wanye Morris and Jameer Johnson, they are bracketed as starters there. Left guard's Trey Smith. Center is Brandon Kennedy with Jerome Carvin behind him. Right guard Jerome Carvin is listed as the starter with Riley Locklear behind him. Right tackle is Darnell Wright with Kayron Calvert behind him. Those are seven guys when you factor in some of those backups like
I think
Calvert,
you might even be able to say eight potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, you have legitimate depth, and with Cade, we have the best interior offensive line in the country. Without him, we have a top three interior line in the SEC. And I think we have a top 10 line, top 5, top 10 line in the country with him. I think we have a top 10, top 15 line in the country without him. So we should be very good up front with or without Cade. I mean, gosh, we've even said this, Brian, too, Todd. If he can't play this year and he does come back, that may not be the worst thing ever, because you got to replace Trey Smith and Brandon Kennedy next year.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
We'll see. What else you got for us, man?
Well, you know, that's some great insight. I agree with you, Eric, there with the fact that I think he really missed out on coming to Tennessee. And I think if he's not a second rounder higher, because I think ultimately he could be a first or second round pick,
for
I
sure.
think he will come back. I think he will come back. And, you know, I'm just excited to see what we're going to roll out there Saturday night and, you know, playing a little golf on Saturday morning. Then I'm going to come right back in and get settled in and watch this game, because I really think Jeremy Pruitt's got this team headed in the right direction.
Todd, we appreciate it. Enjoy your football weekend. Enjoy your first SEC weekend. Should be a lot of fun. Todd, thanks so much. Tennessee did put on some single game tickets for sale this morning. Their process was, once season ticket holders decided whether they wanted to purchase tickets or not, they made some single game tickets available again to season ticket holders, or people that had been season ticket holders. Once that supply, or once everybody had the option to buy those, they have a very limited amount that have got on sale this morning at allvols.com. So if you want to get into a game or two this season, there are some single game tickets that are available this morning at allvols.com. Hopefully get people in that want to be able to see this year with the reduced capacity.
Yeah, I mean, that's... It's going to be weird regardless, man. It feels weird in Neyland when, like, back at the end of Dooley, you remember we'd have, like, 50,000 or 60,000 people show up, and it was like, oh, my, there's nobody here.
Yeah.
With 25,000, it's going to be crazy. I mean, it's
going to look like it's one of the spring games in the Dooley years.
That's exactly what it'll look like, and I don't know that I might have went to, like, one or two of them. It just, I mean, it's going to be it's going to be bizarre.
Yeah, but... It is where we are this year, and I'm just glad there's going to be football.
That's a fact.
When Sandstorm fires up tomorrow night in Columbia, South Carolina, and I hear it through the broadcast, I'm not going to be annoyed by it. Be like, you know what? You crank that Sandstorm, South Carolina, so that means we're playing football. That means we're
Sandstorm wasn't cool 10 years ago. It's not cool now.
I will say I've been to a South Carolina game that Tennessee wasn't playing in. They played Ole Miss on a Thursday night, I want to say in 2009. And I went to the game with some South Carolina people. And when it's not your team playing against them, The whole jumping up and down for Sandstorm thing is actually kind of fun. But when it's your team across the way, it's just annoying as all get out.
You know, another one that I don't think is cool. Doesn't Virginia Tech come out? What do they come out to?
Inner Sandman.
Inner Sandman. Like, Metallica's awesome. Running out to Inner Sandman, not cool.
Exit light, Inner Night, yeah. No, it's...
I don't know. To me, it's so manufactured. It's like Virginia Tech and South Carolina are like cool venues of the not cool venues.
Yeah.
And so they have to do something like that to make it cool.
Yeah, they're the new folks.
It's fine.
They found something in the 90s, and it became tradition, and now you're stuck in the 90s. It's okay.
I wish we were stuck in the 90s.
I do too.
Music was better. Yes. Social media didn't exist.
Yes.
The balls were amazing. I have a hard time not wanting it to be in the 90s, like on a daily basis. We had Decades Day yesterday for Turner and Fallon, and Fallon wore, I don't know if you remember these, Brian, but she wore butterfly hair clips.
Oh yeah.
A choker necklace and overalls.
Yeah.
She was straight out of 1996.
You know what else was in 1996? Peyton Manning. Beating everybody but Florida and Memphis. It's if you're going on a long trip and you're pulling up the satellite radio because you're driving on a long trip, the top two presets on that are absolutely Lithium and 90s on 9. Am I wrong?
No, for sure.
No reasonable person could argue otherwise.
Without a doubt.
Anyway, we'll come back.
Without a doubt.
And that's why we on the Eric Gaines Show celebrate Foo Friday every Friday here on the Eric Gaines Show.
That's right.
It's what we do. A little 90s grunge. We'll come back. The third hour of the Eric Gaines Show, the final hour for this week of the Eric Gaines Show, is coming up. It leads off with our pick segment. It's brought to you by Image Matters. And joining us here at Rusty Wallace Key of Knoxville will be Chad Campbell, will be Jake Bull, and via the phone will be Scott Acuff from Image Matters. As we begin the Battle of Callahan Drive, second year for it, the third year for the picks panel, we're rolling. It's going to be fun. It's always fun. And that's next to lead off the final hour of the Eric Gaines Show on this Football Friday from Rusty Wallace, Key of Knoxville's big football kickoff sale. Join us next on the Eric Gaines Show.